Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. On this week's pod, we are handicapping the Pick 5 from Oaklawn on Saturday, April 18th. This is show number 60, April 17th, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, what's the word?
The word is we're holding steady out here in Washington State. Just thankful that we still have some racing somewhere across the country. And Oaklawn Park has been a pretty fun races to handicap here lately. And this week is no exception. I think we'll have a good conversation. I'm really looking forward to talking to you and our special guest about the races.
Yeah, and I just hope that it's not a sloppy mess like it usually is, because that just throws everything into kerflooey. And on the subject of the coronavirus, we have flattened the curve here in New York State, so that is an optimistic sign. And let's hope we can take care of that issue as soon as possible. Now, we have a special guest with us today. He is a professional horse player who used to work for IBM. He was NHC champion, Eclipse Awarding winning handicapper in 2010. He founded the handicapping tool Optics EQ. He's John Doyle. John, welcome to the pod.
Hey, thanks, guys. How's it going? Glad to be here.
All right. Well, usually we have a few questions prepared for you. I actually was under the gun and didn't prepare any questions. So maybe Chris has one for you.
Well, you are the founder of Optics EQ, so we'll work that in a little bit. You'll get a chance probably to talk a little bit about how you use that tool. But given that you are sort of on the forefront of trying to build innovative new products for horse players, how has that changed or informed your handicapping over the last few years, or has it? I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Well, you know, this is something, it's a tool I've been using for a while, actually, prior to becoming commercial. So, the rest of the public is getting to understand the tool, but I guess I had it 3-4 years before. But it's evolved, and, you know, as you do these things, you start learning a lot more about, especially the optics plot. I mean, really, basically, people that don't know the product, it's really essentially two big things. It's optics plot, which is our pace tool, and then there's optics notes, which really helps you with, I would say, form cycle handicapping, which is the two hardest things. And I think the two differentiators, if you want to be a really good horse player, is try to understand pace and understand form cycle. And I think what we try to do with this tool is help in those areas. And as you just do things more and interact with people more, right? Because initially, you know, I was just kind of doing it myself, but as it gets out to the public and, you know, users use it, and then, you know, I brought, you know, the team that I have, you know, we mentioned Emily before this call. You know, you get to run things by people and try to understand how you can make things better. So it's evolved a lot since then, but it's a tool that initially I set up to kind of help me with my own handicapping, but it's evolved and it's gotten better, in my opinion. And it's, you know, helped me from a handicapping perspective get better too.
Cool. I have a question for you. I was on Twitter, as I usually am, at some point in the morning, and I saw a tweet from Christopher Otto, and I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, or Otto, but he tweeted out something about the 2020 feature. And the thing that I noticed, which I actually am unclear on, is the two different the two different plots, right?
Right.
Like, what do circles and squares mean?
Okay, circles and squares, you know, first of all, the two plots that you've seen side by side, just quickly. One, the standard is just what we try to do is get the horse's recent form. So it doesn't depend on it was a sprint, a route, grass race. We try to get recency because that's so important, right, in horse's form. The second plot is a surface distance, specifically for today's surface and distance. So a route on the dirt, right, for instance. So those are the two plots. I think side by side, they give you a really kind of indication of, you know, first of all, is the horse in form? Secondly, you know, there's a horse suited for today's surface and distance. The squares and circles represent the horse's late pace. So it's three dimensions for the plot. So the x-axis really talks about the horse's, you know, early pace ability. The y-axis talks about the horse's ability to through the second call, like fast velocity through a second call. And the squares those represent the horse's finish ability. So a circle is a horse that's not finishing as well as a square relative to the horses in the race. So square means better finisher, circle means worst finisher. And the bigger, the just the more, you know, more emphasis. So a big square horse can really finish, a big circle the horse really drops off.
So looking at the tweet that I'm looking at, it covers one of our races. I noticed that in the Apple Blossom, CC has, who's the 14 horse, is the biggest right. circle on the surface distance plot. Does that mean that on this surface and distance that she is less likely to be able to finish well?
Right. And that's what
based on the plot.
Right. But, you know, basically the whole thing with any of these kinds of tools, right, this is not a predictive tool. It's a past performance tool. So, yes, based on the races relative to the other horse in the race, this horse, at least from a standard perspective, falls off more. Now, I think on the surface distance plot, she's kind of a smaller square. I'm not looking at it right now, but I think she probably is a smaller square or a smaller circle. But, yes, you're correct. On that standard plot, you know, she's a bigger circle. In fact, I don't know if you want to do, Scott, I have all the plots of the five races, so I can send them to you if you want to post them somewhere so people can look at them. If you want to look at them, we can do that along with the right, you know, along with this audio might be something that might be interesting to people.
Sure. Yeah, we'll do that. And I'll tweet them out. Hopefully I'll learn from them as well.
Okay, great.
All right. Chris, any other questions before we get started?
No, I think we're ready to go.
Okay, fantastic. So we're doing the Pick Five at Oaklawn Park. It starts with the seventh race, runs through the 11th race. Just as a reminder, it's a 21% takeout, which is not as ideal as many tracks 15, but it's still 21%, which is not that bad. So considering that the payoff was $296,000 last week for a 50-cent bet, I like our chances to hit something big. So we start with the seventh race at Oaklawn. It's an allowance. It's a mile on the dirt, purse of $61,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And John, as our guest of honor, we'll let you start off.
Okay. So from a plot perspective, and I kind of start with the optics plot, this has a red plot fit. So it means that we're really undecided on way the pace might set up. It's a little bit fuzzy. So I kind of try to drop down in and look at the horse's forms using optics notes to try to get an idea of form cycle and so forth. And, you know, I always start my assessment with the favorite. Desmond, I guess, is going to probably be the morning line favorite. And it's the Bob Baffert horse, so the horse is going to get over bed, I would imagine. And I just think that this horse might be a little bit vulnerable. And the reasons being is, you know, I've just kind of watched him run. And a lot of his got some gait issues. Just seems to have problems starting. They're putting the blinkers back on him. I just think they're not sure about this horse. I mean, he looked like he had some promise back in 2019. You know, he was second in the stakes in the the San Vincent, and then, but you know, he just didn't show up after that, and he's just been spotty in terms of his running. If you look at the horse, the way he runs, he's kind of clumsy, he's awkward, he's high-headed, not a typical Bob Baffert horse. They're more streamlined and so forth. So I just think this is a horse that probably will get over bet somewhat. And I'm not saying you toss him, but it's a horse that maybe we take a chance against. And there's just a couple that really kind of, at least and I jump at it. And the number one is Wild Poppet. I don't like to usually bet like maiden winners, but this horse ran two really good maiden races in our figures, Optic figures. He ran in the 90s, which is a good, very good. And I just think he could make the move to two turns. This is going to be the first time two turns. Just kind of looks like a two-turn horse to me. Finished up really well, like the way he galloped out in his last win. And I just think it was over today's track. And I think that's a horse that, you know, if he could be a full play, save some ground, I think this horse can kick in. I thought that was a really good maiden win. And, you know, the other horse that I thought about, now this horse coming off a long layoff, but I really like the way this horse broke his maiden last year at Aqueduct. I do the notes. I do trip notes for Aqueduct for Optics. And Tikin, number six, Tikin View Flu. I don't know. I guess that's some kind of Russian name. This horse is coming off a long layoff. Another typical angle I don't like. But this horse ran great first time. And I just think they kind of rushed him a little bit, you know, into the graded stakes. And that kind of failed. But I think he can handle the distance. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, is he going to be ready? But his field is is not great. So I think he's got a shot. So that's another horse, I think, from a price perspective that I'd be looking at.
Okay. I wonder if Tikvin Flu is the Russian pandemic that will happen to us someday. All right.
COVID-20. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Chris, what do you think in this race?
Well, I'm very similar to what John said. First of all, Wild Poppet was actually, I think, your pick in a race last week he scratched out of. I liked him too, pretty much for all the same reasons that John cited. He does draw the rail, and he's really bred to stretch out. His trainer has some bad stats we talked about last week stretching out, but that doesn't mean the horse couldn't run well in here. The interesting thing that I think from a pace perspective, there isn't any speed in this race, which is really unusual. There's really no horses that are typically right up on the lead. And so I think this race really sets up for horses, someone to seize the early lead and maybe take them wire to wire. You'd think it would be the five Desmond, which makes me a little nervous about that horse because, you know, it is Baffert and he is good. But he does tend to break sluggishly, and, you know, maybe he won't break alertly and someone else can get the lead. And the horse I really like in here is, unfortunately, John sort of stole my thunder a bit, is Tikvin Flu. I actually picked this horse on the pod about a year ago in New York. It was that second start when he ran against, I think, High Cal won that race, who's a pretty good horse. Just like John said, this horse ran a monster race in its debut. It was it's well bred. It was bet that day. It came back after that, and they jumped right into a stakes. And it was actually probably a better race in its debut. He was stalking wide the whole way and got a little tired at the end, but still ran well. So those were two really big efforts. And I agree, like what John said. They kind of rushed him into some two-turn or longer stakes races. And we've talked about this. When a horse, a young three-year-old or a two-year-old, runs a couple really big efforts like that, there's a good chance they can regress. And when they do, they typically don't come back to those numbers for a long time. They usually need some sort of layoff to really get back to good races. And so they stuck with this horse for a while, but he just continued to tail off. And they finally actually even tried him on the turf, and then they just put him on the shelf. And now he comes back off the layoff. And remember, he ran his best race, you know, in his first start. So he's a horse that can get, you know, seems to like training because he got himself ready in that debut. And, you know, Asmussen's a good trainer. It is going two turns, but I think this horse is one with Tyler Bayes that might decide to go right to the front. He has good tactical speed in his first couple starts. We're sprinting against some good horses. So I think they could be aggressive with him. And, you know, maybe they can get the jump on Desmond. If not, they can track him. And maybe Wild Poppet might be the other one that wants to be near the front. And I think those three are really the three in here. But Tikvin Flu will be a big price. And, you know, I've always liked this horse. It's a kind of a, I'd like him even more if he had one start under his belt, then it would like be the perfect horse for me to play, especially if he didn't win that first start. He had some very good race in there. But, you know, I think he's the play in here. So number six, Tickvin Flew.
I will note that Tickvin Flew has a very sharp workout on February 29th, five furlongs, a minute and 1/5. And that's 1/5 off his very fastest workout that he was running before his debut. In his debut, he was in second, a half length back in the, at the quarter at 7 furlongs. So he ran the kind of race that day where I want to bet against him in his first two turn race, which didn't happen until the Arkansas Derby. But I don't see why he can't get a mile, and he's got a sibling that ran much better routing. So he's one of the horses that I would include. I'll also say that Desmond, I hate Desmond. He's like a value destroyer, but if I'm going to play the pick five, I'm going to have something, some ticket with him on, and him and like just price horses afterwards. The horse that I like, which you alluded to before, is of course Wild Poppet. I think, you know, instead of running that day, he just breezed a nice 4 furlong workout at Oaklawn. I like him getting another week. He was evenly matched with those horses, and in his two turn debut, it might have been hard to beat them. I think this field's a little bit easier for him, and I love that he had a great move from his first race to second race off the layoff. He bobbled in his last. He closed, and then he romped, as John alluded to, on the gallop out. The Grand Dam is Flanders, and two winners have come out of his last race. So I'm sticking with Wild Poppet again. I think you use Desmond and Tickvin Flew. And then just to add one other horse that's sort of interesting, I mean, there are like three that are sort of interesting that you might want to consider. Locally owned has always been fast, and he just hasn't progressed, but he's second time gelding. And while that's not a known angle, maybe it'll work, you know, because he's always been fast. He just hasn't broken through. If he runs a big race as a 4-year-old, he could win this race at 15-1.
John, anything else you want to jump in and add?
No, I mean, the only other thing I would say, just again on Tickvin, that race in the mistakes race to the second race, the Jimmy or whatever it was, he was again. You said he was wide, Chris, and there was a bias, an extreme bias that day, so he was against the bias too. So those first two races, he duplicate that after those, any one of those efforts, he wins. He could win at a big price. So that's just one other point I wanted to make.
And one other point
that's
about
a good
him.
Point.
He beat Spun to Run in his debut race.
Yeah, he did. And who went on to be a really good horse. And he's really well bred. I mean, he's really bred pretty good top and bottom. So he's a good horse. I just, will he be ready is the big question.
Right, exactly.
Any other includes for you, Chris?
Well, just one horse I'll mention is the 7 horse Everfast. You know, he's a good horse. I think he'll win some races this year, but I just think, you know, the pace isn't going to be in his favor. He comes from out of it and he's off a long layoff with a trainer change. So, you know, I just think he may need a race, but certainly of the closers, you know, he's got some talent and class, so he's probably the other contender in here, besides the three that we've talked about.
The trainer, Jack Sisterson, is pretty bad off the layoff. In fact, his numbers are like 0-0-0 for three going 6 months after, as a 4-year-old and older, 6 month layoff on the dirt. He's never even been in the money. He does have fast workouts, but I noticed as I was going through all the workouts that all the horses that ran that have worked out at Keeneland show really fast workouts. And I noticed this last year, for some reason, the track just must be faster there. And so I wouldn't put too much credence into that. Although watch Everfast win at 8-1 and make a fool of me. All right, we'll move on to the next race then. And that's the 8th race at Oaklawn. It's the Count Fleet Sprint Handicap, a grade 3, 6 furlongs on the dirt, purse of $350,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And Chris, your turn this time. What do you think?
Well, this is a great race. I think you have to start just the discussion with Hidden Scroll. He's probably the most, I don't know, polarizing horse on Twitter. Some people love him. Yeah, some people just absolutely hate him. I think there's no doubt he has a lot of talent, and it wouldn't shock me at all to see him run well. I mean, he's going second off a layoff. He had a nice return race. And there's just a lot to like about him, but there are some big question marks still around him. You know, his two wins were clearly one races he was able to dominate from the start against overmatched rivals. He hasn't won otherwise. Today, you know, he's not got a bunch of overmatched rivals. He's got some serious gas with Bobby's Wicked One, who will challenge him early if they let him run. And then I'll never forget the way they just like hammerlocked him in the Florida Derby last year. You know, just choked his out any sort of desire he might have had to run, and kind of handed that race to Maximum Security. Who knows? They might try to do that in here and just give the race to Bobby's Wicked One, because, you know, they're trying to get him to learn how to relax and they're targets some of the big races down the road. So, you know, if they strangle him out of the gate, he can lose. Even if they let him roll, he might hook up with Bobby's Wicked One and get tired, or he just might, you know, respond to rating or just be brilliant and blow him away anyway. So really hard to, you know, to figure out what to do with him. But I do think there are question marks, and this will be the, you know, the time to try to beat him. And I think we'll get some of those questions answered in this race. It is interesting. They kept him at 6 furlongs here. Didn't stretch him out at all off of that last race. So maybe they're thinking he is a sprinter and they're going to stick him around one turn. So we'll see. So I'm not against him. I don't think he's a overrated dud like some people on Twitter might say, but I do think he's vulnerable. So I'm going to probably look elsewhere, although I wouldn't toss him from your pick 5. I think the 4-1 morning line is a joke. There's no way he's 4-1 in here. You know, I think he was 1-9 in his last start. So we'll see about that. But we know from experience the last few weeks, the morning line at Oaklawn is pretty far off on many of the horses. So anyway, the horse I really like in here to beat Hidden Scroll and the others is the 5-horse Wendell Fong. He's sort of a classic horse I love to play. He showed some real talent as a 3-year-old. He ran 2 really big races in the spring. One of them was much better than it looked. That was the race where he lost to Hog Creek Hustle, who's in this race. You know, that race, the reason I liked Hog Creek Hustle so much was because it was loaded with speed. It looked like the pace could be radioactive, and that's what it was. And Wendell Fong was right there sitting in second. And he never really quit. He ran a big race there. And he was even parked wide on a day when the rail was pretty favorable. So, you know, he has a lot of talent. At 6 furlongs, he was 3-for-3 until his race off the bench last time out, which he probably needed. So he can sit off and finish without dropping too far back. He could, you know, get a perfect trip in behind Hidden Scroll and Bobby's Wicked One. And he's 30-1 on the morning line. So, and in this race, he might actually go off at 30-1 with Hidden Scroll and Bobby's Wicked One and Whitmore and some others. So, You know, I really like Wendell Fong as a very live long shot in here.
And notably, he was giving weight to Whitmore in that last race. Somehow the conditions worked out that way. So he was giving weight to the superior, already well-known sprinter. John, what did you think in this race?
You know, I kind of pretty much agree with Chris's assessment because, you know, Bobby's Wicked One looks like the fastest horse, but on our plot, I mean, he's going to get some contention. You know, you have the six in there. You know, we talked about the seven. There's a number of different ways the seven could go. You know, is the seven going to be keyed up, or is he going to be able to rate behind the Jägermeister and Bobby's Wicked One? Don't know. I mean, he could trip out. So I think there's some contention, even though it's not a blazing pace. I think it's going to be contention. So I'm like Chris. I like the five. Hogcrete Custle, I just love that horse. And I think he's, you know, his first two races, I think they get him a race more earlier. There's some of it was situational because, you know, in the Fairgrounds race, there was only three horses in the race. You know, Bobby's Wicked One was the leader. So they had to get him involved in the race earlier and also in the Gulfstream Mile. So I think, you know, he's against the tactics his last two. But I think he may be able to sit a little bit trip this time. And so I don't expect him to be way off because obviously they've been trying to do something with him to get him closer up. Seven furlongs is his best distance probably, but I still would include him, you know, at a price. And then I know this horse is a deep, deep closer, but if, you know, for some reason things get heated up front, you know, I like to see Nitrous coming from way out of it. He was in that Hog Creek Hustle and they finished, you know, first and second, I think. Was the with the Amsterdam, and so, you know, just would give him a shot. It's a long layoff, but looks like Santana jumps to that horse because again the 10 could be up there early and who knows, you know, share the upside. So I'm really kind of against the favorites here. The reason I'm against Whitmore, I mean, here, how do you against a horse that's races at six furlongs and it's only finished out of the money once, I think. Amazing. The horse is just great. I try to beat him a lot, but he's been getting good trips. And I think the problem with his post position, he's going to get caught wide. And he does get caught wide. That's when he's a little bit vulnerable. You know, half of his losses have come when he's been caught wide. His last race, he got the perfect inside out trip. And so that's kind of against the favorites in here. And I'm looking for some bomb in this race. And I'm kind of, that's my thinking.
Okay, Hog Creek Hustle. Yeah, 0-for-4 at the distance, but does have a second and a third. I'll chime in on Wendell Fong. He's always been fast. He can sit just off the expected fast pace. He was working like a mad dog before his last race. And his last race, he ran against a strong speed flow and ended up running third. Now, Whitmore also was running against that speed flow, but he got a beautiful inside trip. And he was actually closer up than Wendell Fong. So he had a little bit of advantage. And I would guess that Wendell Fong will get an upgrade from racingflow.com. So there's a lot more speed in this race. And I think that he won't have that issue. So he's an absolute use. He's my top pick in the race. He's a fresh four-year-old. I agree with you, Chris. Now, I would love to beat these favorites, but I have something to say about each one, and I will not be excluding any of them. Bobby's Wicked One can't be left off the tickets. He's fast enough. He's going to have the lead, and he's won on the lead in other races where people thought the pace would be insane. Specifically, the Commonwealth at Keeneland going 7 furlongs last spring. It was supposed to be a meltdown, and he ended up winning it on the lead at 13 to 1, I think it was. Now, Hidden Scroll, I would love, I bet against him every race since his debut. Or if I, you know, I didn't just go out of my way to bet against him. If I was watching a race, I was against him. But the race that he came back in was a really nice race, and it was so easy. And it wasn't as fast as the debut, which was in the slop. It was a big number in the slop. I can see, because he did that as a young three-year-old, I expected it to knock him out, but not necessarily for life. And now he's a four-year-old. He's grown, and he's actually a huge horse. He weighs 1,271 pounds. And just to put that in perspective, there's some horses on the day. I didn't look at every – we don't have the info for every horse in this race, but there are other horses that are running today that weigh less than 1,000 pounds. So he's just a big monster. And he's run almost exclusively bullets for the last 3 months. So I think he'll be undervalued, but he could run a monster race, and I don't want to let him beat me. The third horse is Whitmore, and I'm not betting against him either. I'm going to include him because he runs huge in this race every year, and win or lose, he's going to run his number. So somebody's going to have to run faster than Whitmore usually does in this race. And every time Whitmore runs in this race, he runs as fast as Hidden Scroll did in that debut race that knocked him out. So I liked his last race. It was he was nimble, running on the inside, not too far off the pace because he couldn't afford to be. He carried less than all, but that's good because the race was not too taxing for him. So even though I would love to beat those favorites, I've got to include all of them because they just figure on the numbers. So I'll be using four horses in this race.
Okay, John, you want to jump back in?
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that to some extent. The only thing with Hidden Scroll, but one thing I'll just say about him too, I love to see them try this horse on the turf. It just looks turfy to me. And, you know, I said that from like day one. And one turn is where he wants to be. I'm not sure about six furlongs. And that race that he won last time, I mean, that was a soft field. I mean, that was those horses suck.
So I mean, I understand that.
I don't know what else to say. But I just think these horses are much more hardened than the horses he's running against. Like I said, Bobby's Wicked won two big races. I agree with you, but again, the only other thing I'll say about him is that those were three horse fields. So I mean, he just gets a much more challenging, and Mr. Jägermeister is going to put some pressure on him. So we'll see. It's a spread race for sure. Whether way you go, I think it's a spread race.
All right. So now, John, you're going to get some hate tweets now on Hidden Scroll. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that about the turf, because I've said the same thing. I mean, he's really bred like he'd be a great turf horse. I understand why they haven't tried him yet, but I would not be surprised somewhere down the road. You know, a horse with his kind of natural speed that's bred for the turf, you know, I could see him doing a lot of damage on the grass. So I would like to see him try the turf. So that's interesting that you said that, because I agree with that. And I'll say one other thing about Bobby's Wicked One. He really does well when he shakes loose and gets an easy lead. But he usually doesn't win if he gets challenged. So, you know, the question is, will he get challenged in here? It seems like there's a couple in here that could challenge him early. So, but you never know. But he does seem like that horse that when he gets the lead, he's really good. You know, he gets an easy lead. When he doesn't, he doesn't seem like the kind that likes to finish off the races when he's been challenged early. So that's something to keep in mind. And just Hog Creek Hustle, I definitely like him. He's my second choice. I mean, I've had him at prices on the pod before. He's just a really honest horse that finishes his races. I do think six furlongs isn't ideal, but he might get the setup he needs. You know, he'll be finishing strong. I definitely wouldn't leave him out of, you know, exotics underneath and vertical plays for sure. And he could win it. There's no doubt he could win it. But I just think from a value standpoint and from a trip standpoint, Window Fong should just get a really good trip. He gets in light, you know, second off a layoff, lots of talent, lots of upside. He just seems to me like the kind of the clear play in here from a value standpoint.
Yeah, and just one last note on Wendell Fong. He's supposed to carry 115, but David Cohen, who's the rider, rides at no less than 117 based on my experience. So it could be anywhere from 117 to 119. Hopefully it'll be 117 so that he has a better shot in this race. The third race in the sequence is the ninth at Oaklawn. It's an allowance optional claiming, 6 furlongs on the dirt, a purse of $62,000 for fillies and mares, four-year-olds and up. And John, we'll let you get us started this time.
Okay. I you know, this race, it looks to me the speeds are going to really kind of separate early, break even, and Mount Brave. Those are two horses that I think, at least from the plot perspective, look like they're going to separate themselves from the rest of the field. You know, they may be tough to reel in. I'm both of them kind of like to go. There's a couple of different scenarios could happen there, right? One could be sitting off the other and, you know, maybe pass one at the end, or they can duel themselves into submission, or maybe the six could separate or the nine could separate and go on to win. So there's a number of different ways, but I think I would be using both of those just from that perspective. However, I think the 10, Take Charge Angel could be just kind of set a good strip behind those two horses. That's one horse that I would kind of use on my ticket. I think that horse could be dangerous just right off the pace. And yeah, the other horse that could sit the trip behind those speeds would be the one, Shanghai Tariff. So those are two horses that I would consider also. And then like just from a horse that I think might be just worth looking at, is the 7. This is a long shot. Honey's Sock Appeal. I mean, this horse hasn't run 230 days, looks kind of cheap. But anytime a filly is 8-for-16 wins on the dirt, and 15-for-16 in the money, I don't care, you know, how long, I don't care how cheap, it's a horse you have to look at. And, maybe you can get, if those two go really crazy up front, maybe she could be picking up at least some pieces at the end at a big number. So, that's kind of my assessment of the race. No strong opinion. Just think that's kind of the way it looks to me.
Who's your top pick, just for purposes of being able to tout?
I go with the 10, Take Charge Angel. That would be my top pick.
Okay. A very interesting pick, Chris. What did you think?
Well, I think the pace seems like it's pretty hot. Maybe those two can separate. But to me, if they do, I don't like horses like Take Charge Angel and Shanghai Tariff, because I think they get sucked into that hot pace and they just get gutted. I don't like speed horses that can't get the lead in a race. Occasionally, they might run well, but I would rather have a horse sitting farther off or the one that will be on the lead. And to me, this break even's a lot like Hidden Scroll. She just towers over these, I think, if she runs her race. But there's some question marks because, she came back and just ran a bad race. She's never run a bad race in her life. She got late. Brad Cox is good bringing him back. He didn't bring her back in a real brutal spot, and it seemed like a logical place to put her. And she just didn't respond very well. And now he runs her back in an allowance race. First time she hasn't been in a stakes race in over a year. That to me is not a big vote of confidence. It might just be a function of there's not many stakes race opportunities for older fillies sprinting right now. I just don't know. I haven't seen the what's available, but to me there's some question marks with her, and there's a lot of pace. I don't think she gets an easy lead in here. I don't think see her clearing, so she'll have to work from start to finish. So I'm looking for a horse that comes from out of it, and there, to me there's two obvious ones. The one is 8 Horse Heaven's Whisper. She's not a super good horse, but she's probably the best closer in the race, and she's in good form, and she's fast enough to win, and she could get a good setup. She's 6-to-1 in the morning line. That doesn't get me real excited. So from a value standpoint, she's probably not the play. But I think she's definitely one you have to use. But I think maybe the value in this race is the 4 horse Headland, who to me is one that is more comfortable sitting just off than like a Take Charge Angel or Shanghai Tariff. So I think she could sit that trip where she's in behind all the speed horses, doesn't get caught up in that early pace and might be able to trip out. And she'll be a big price. I thought she would have run a little better last time than she did. Second off a layoff, I would have expected that to be a big race for her. But it was on a wet fast, probably a sealed track. And so maybe she just didn't like the track. So I'm going to forgive her that one. And maybe she'll run that big race now, third off a layoff. She definitely has some upside, and she could get a good trip. So for me, it's number four, Headland.
Okay. Well, I'll add we're in agreement again, Chris, because those are my exact two horses. I think that the pace is going to be sensational. I think Break Even probably hurt herself by running too fast last year as a young three-year-old. So she's got a big chance of not running well. And I wasn't even thinking about the conditions, but you're right. It is an allowance race. And she ran against Mount Brave, and they smoked each other in their last race. And there's even more speed in this race. One of them is Shanghai Tariff, who really has no choice but to go from the one hole. And she's carrying 124, which is 6 pounds more than Break Even. So I salute her if she can beat Break Even giving her 6 pounds. And then, you know, there are some other speeds. So I'll add fuel to the fire on Headland. I actually love that she reacted in her last race. She matched her three-year-old best in her four-year-old debut. And we've talked about this before. Chris will always fire in the next race right off the layoff, the second off the layoff, because the horse is healthy and ready to run. And they often do run well. And you've caught some of those without me. But because the three-year-old race that she ran, which was at Churchill in June, it affected her pretty negatively for 6 months. In fact, it took her 9 months to get back to that top. Well, so she got back to that top. I wouldn't expect her to run another fast race right away. I would expect her to need 6 to 8 weeks. And she gets that. She's 4 for 6 at Oaklawn. Steve Hobby, the trainer, is 6 for 14 at the meet. And she's a closer. I also like Heaven's Whisper. I will go skinny in this race with just those two as the closers, because I can't go too deep in the pick five. And that's how I can get away with having all three favorites in the race before that, is by going skinny in this one.
What I don't like about your two picks, the 4 and the 8, is that I don't think those horses are really finishers, closers. I think they need to be up close. And I think we talked about the speed with the 6 and 9, they're going to go. And I'm just concerned about those keeping up and being in position and be able to finish the way they can. So, you know, I don't think that the 8 is really a closer per se. I think more of a, you know, more of a presser, an early type pace horse. And I think the 4 needs to be much closer to the pace. That's why I was a little bit against those horses. You know, because I guess, you know, form-wise, they look okay. I just think style-wise, I don't think they're going to be finishing if they're like, you know, if the 4 is 4 lengths behind, I don't see the horse winning. And if she's going to be 2 lengths behind, then she's be going pretty fast, and that's my concern.
Yeah, I understand that logic, and if you look at her running lines, she does seem to be close to the pace most of the time. However, in her best race as a four-year-old, she was 3 3/4 lengths behind at the quarter and at the half, and she ended up not quite winning. She was third by 3 3/4 length. I think that proved that she doesn't have to be close to the pace.
Yeah, well, in that race, in the two back, the last race, it was a blanket at the finish. So I'm a little concerned about who was finishing in that race. And then the last race, again, in the wet track race, the whole last race, she was very plotty, very one paced. So, and Bayes goes off of her to get, I guess she gets Garcia. Well, I see that as a downgrade, in my opinion, my personal opinion about Garcia. So that's kind of my hits against her.
Okay. Well, that's why they have betting. So let's move on to the next.
Can I just jump back in real quick?
Sure. Sorry about that.
I do think that's all right. It could be a chaos race. I agree, because of the pace could be hot. And it could be that one where a lot of those races where a lot of horses get gutted and they're all staggering late. And somebody who was switched off early comes rolling late. And the one horse that's kind of interesting, I think, as a total bomb would be the 12 horse Spring in the Wind. It's done a lot of racing on synth and dirt. It's coming off a layoff for a trainer who, you know, he's not a well-known trainer. He's not necessarily a really good trainer, but he has won off a layoff on a short sample. Does draw the outside, might just drop back, and could be that horse that could at least hit the board at a big price if they all start staggering late. I'm not saying it's a win bet, but it's just one of those horses in a chaos race that might get a piece.
I agree with that.
Plenty of food for thought, plenty of ways to go in this race if you decide to try to beat break even. All right, the next race is the 10th at Oaklawn. It's the Apple Blossom Handicap. It's a grade one, 1/16 on dirt with a purse of $600,000 for fillies and mares, four-year-olds and up. Chris, what did you think here?
Wow, this is a really, really nice race. I mean, I think this is one of the benefits of all the tracks being shut down right now is you have a grade one race and you get a lot of good horses, you know, in a big field, which is what we always like to see as players. And there's a lot of ways you could go in here. I'll just state my two strongest opinions, one negative and one positive, and then I'll turn it over to you and hopefully I can chime in again later. On the negative side, I really don't like Come Dancing, the four horse. She's talented and she's run some big races, but she's never been two turns. She's off a layoff. She switches to Lucas. And Lucas can still train, but his forte is not getting horses ready to go two turns off a layoff. She's the morning line favorite. That seems a little off, but she does get bet. I mean, she got bet even in the Breeders' Cup this year against like Kafefe and Bellafina. So she's got a fan club. She does get played, but I'm going to toss her. You know, I'll let her beat me. So that's my negative opinion. My positive opinion, I've got several value plays, but probably the one I like the most is the 5-horse Point of Honor. I'm a little worried that she'll get bet. She's 10-1 on the morning line, but she always gets bet. So she may not be the value win play, but I'll just go off the morning line. I really like her. I think she's the most likely winner. She makes her second start off a layoff. She always runs her race. Looks like there should be a solid pace that will help her out. Her last race was clearly a prep. I mean, she'd never sprinted in her life and they sent her 7 furlongs. She ran well enough. They probably would have liked to win, but that wasn't the objective. It's clear that they were pointing to a race. It may not have been this race. It might've been a race at Keeneland. I don't know, but either way, I think they really have her ready to run a big race, and I think she'll respond with a big effort. So Point of Honor, the 5-horse, looks really good in here to me at the morning line. When she gets bet down, there's a couple Plan B horses I can talk about later.
All right. Yeah, she usually does get bet. I don't believe she's gone off it more than 7-2 in any of her races. All right, John, what did you think here?
I agree with Chris on the 4, that's for sure. And I respect his opinion on the 5 because I've heard several other people I know, I respect their opinions, like the 5 too. But, you know, I think the still Serengeti Empress is the horse to beat. I think she's going to clear this field. You know, a lot of people saying, oh, you know, there's a lot of contention here, a lot of speed. I'm not seeing it that way. I know she's got a deep post, and I know Cookie Doe's drawn inside of her, but I still think she clears, so I still think she's the horse to beat in this race, just on class, and especially if they go fast early. If they go fast early, I think it gives her an advantage. because I think she runs a lot of the other horses off their feet. Horses that I think, you know, if they can hang around and run pretty well, I think Cookie Dough, if, you know, there's a kind of a scenario where if she can hang with her and maybe pass her late, that's one scenario. I also will give some call out to Go Google Yourself. And the six, I think, is Street Band. Just not sure about this horse, but I think this horse could sit a perfect trip if they do. If the 11 and 10 do hook up, I think the 6 and the 12 are my kind of horses that can kind of pick up the pieces. But I don't know. I've been hearing everyone negative on the 11, and I just think she just may run this field off their feet. She really changes the pace dynamics, the races she's in, because she goes really fast. And if you look at races, you know, what I do is I try to look at horses form in a scenario like that of fast or very fast pace and see how they run. And the horses that seem to run good in that scenario here are the 10, the 11, and the 6. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay. I will just add that the opinion that Come Dancing is not going to run well is like the most popular opinion on Twitter. If you could short a horse, she would be massively short, like 80% of the stock would be shorted on her. So I think she'll be like 10 to 1. I don't know anybody who likes her, and I don't know why anybody would like her going two turns, especially off two workouts since the Breeders' Cup. Now, I understand that they've been jogging her, and you know she's probably doesn't need too many workouts, but usually you want to see like four or five or six workouts, especially off a big year. So anyway, the horse that I like in this race is Go Google Yourself. She's got a bad post, so I don't know if I'm going to put a win bet on her, but I'll definitely have her in the pick four. She's always been fast. She ran a big number as a two-year-old at Churchill going a mile. She's improved every year, but still hasn't had that breakout performance. I think it could be today. She matched her best going a mile and an eighth at Churchill in November when she was second in a grade two. And in her last, she was professional and manageable on the inside and still wore down her foe, despite not running her best number. So I actually, a five-year-old, I want not running off their best number. I want running off their something close to her best, but not quite her best. And that's going to hopefully slingshot her to run the best race of her life. That was Paul McGee's only starter this meet. And he's back with her. And I think that today's the day that he's shooting for the grade one. And that doesn't mean he's going to get it, but the value's there. She should be at least 12 to 1. I think she could go off much higher. And she's my top pick. I also like Point of Honor. I agree with you, Chris. She probably will be bet. She probably, you know, take a lot of the money that people think is going to go on to Come Dancing. And I also agree with you, John, that Serengeti Empress, she's a monster. She's always been a monster. And the fact that she won the Kentucky Oaks on the lead in a race that was like this, filled with speed, but it was filled with even more speed, and she just blew them off their feet. And she also in her last race, which looked like a really big race, it was only a match of her best race. So she can move forward off of that. And I agree with you that she could just blitz them. So those are the three that I would use in the pick five.
Well, let me jump back in again. You can see, you know, this is a really good race with a lot of contenders, because there's several more that I think are really solid and could be value that I want to talk about. I do want to kind of just concur with you. Serengeti Empress is kind of horse. She's going to run fast early, no matter who's in the race. So she's the kind where, to me, you just toss any other speed horse in the race. So I, unlike John, I think Cookie Dough is a complete toss, because she's not going to be able to keep pace with Serengeti Empress. She's too fast, and she does run the speed horses off their feet, which is why I don't want any other speed horses in here. But I don't think that necessarily helps her with other horses, you know, the closers and stalkers. They still might be able to run her down. And she's a really good horse, but she doesn't win a lot of races, although she's been running against the best horses. She usually runs well, but she doesn't always win, especially going two turns. So I think she probably is the horse to beat, but she's definitely not unbeatable. The other two horses I just want to mention is our Street Band, who I think her last race, you know, they tried to chase Serengeti Empress. That's really not her game. And that was on a sloppy track, and they just weren't going to beat her that day. So I will forgive her that effort. The race before that, where she got beat by a neck by Serengeti Empress, she was parked wide all the way around in that race. And she made a middle move and then just kind of hung late. But I think that was the extra ground covered. That was actually she might have been the best horse on the day. And then her race in the Breeders' Cup was just a complete toss. She had a terrible trip. So I think her form is buried good. And I really like her. I wish she had a different rider. I just don't trust Sophie Doyle. She's not terrible, but you know, she hasn't really given this horse a good ride in the last three, but she has won on her in the past. So that's the part that makes me nervous. But if she, you know, lets her run a race and keeps her out of trouble and doesn't keep her out too far out wide, Street Band could definitely win in here. And there's one other horse I'll mention, but I'll turn it back over to John and Scott to jump in if they want to.
Yeah, I do. Just one thing on the Cookie Dough thing. Cookie Dough doesn't need to lead. So what I was guessing, Chris, a scenario could be Serengeti Empress opens up a 2-3 length lead, and Cookie Dough sits there and maybe he's ahead of the rest of the pack and acts as a lone for the rest of the pack. And just in case, you know, Serengeti Empress comes for whatever reason, she flipped out one day, you know, back last year at Fairgrounds. Cookie Dough could just be there and pick up the pieces. So that's the first thing I want to say. And the second thing on closers in general, when the pace is really fast, that doesn't necessarily help closers. I know that sounds weird, but what I'm talking about is what really helps closers is a conscious fast pace versus when the field gets spaced out, stretched out, that really doesn't help closers. They just have to make up too much ground late and they have to just work to kind of keep up. So I just think sometimes, you know, like everyone just thinks, oh, this is going to be a real fast pace, 21 and 43. Well, the closers are in like some other land. It's, you know, so sometimes unless that horse has that kind of style, like a Hogs Hustle that we talked about and, you know, and all the rest, it's very difficult for those horses to make up ground like that. It's just, that's what I find.
Well, that's why I like Google. Go Google yourself. She isn't one of those horses that needs to be far back. She usually is pretty close, but the nice thing is that she has won from far back. Chris, you had another horse?
I agree.
I think the one horse, Ollie's Candy, is a really nice horse. Had its prep race. It got sort of drilled by CC in that race, but it was off a layoff. Now it's second off a layoff. It draws the rail. Rosario jumps on. And this is a horse that can sit close, but doesn't have to. It's to me the kind of horse that can get the trip that John described for Cookie Dough, who to me is probably going to be closer, going faster than it's used to. But to me, Ollie's Candy could tuck in that pocket trip behind those two and just sort of trip out, and certainly is capable of winning this race, has some talent. Might be the one that gets first run on all the other horses, and maybe could run down Serengeti Empress and hold off, you know, horses, the other closers. And that horse might be a price. She's 12 to 1 on the morning line. There's so many horses in here. Someone's going to get overlooked. So to me, point of honor, I'll watch the odds. They do better, like I think they might. Street Band and Ollie's Candy are good plan B horses for me in this race.
I would agree with you on point of honor. I actually am against both Ollie's Candy and Street Band. Now, there's not a big advantage to being against Ollie's Candy at that morning line, although I think she'll be lower than that. everybody gets a piece of Come Dancing's line. The reason I'm worried about her is I think her one win last year, she was on the lead. And I feel like she is going to get caught in that speed vortex where she's going to run faster than she wants to because she can't help it. And she'll tire. And Street Band, she's an example of a horse to me that has run too fast for her own good. And she ran too fast for her own good in the Cotillion last year, where she ran a top number. It was on the sheets. It was like a 4-point top. And great, you know, it's great that she ran and won that race. But I think she ran too fast. And she's a play against for me until she proves otherwise. She's also 15-1, but everybody's talking about her on Twitter, at least like Andy Serling and Nick Tamaro. So I don't mean to, you know, talk negatively about a 15-1, but I also think she'll be lower than 10-1. So,
yeah, it's really hard to figure the odds in this big of a field that's this contentious. I mean, you've got CC as well, even Horologist. So. This is, you know, clearly we're all over the place. So this is a wide open race with a lot of good horses, and it'll be a really fun one to watch and play.
All right. Well, this is the one that it could kick everybody out of the pick five, or a lot of people. We'll go to the 11th at Oaklawn. It's a claiming race, 1 1/16 on dirt for 38,000 for 4-year-olds and up. And we'll let you get started. What did you think, John?
Impossible. Really hard race, I think, for me. I guess the two is going to be the favorite Curlo. And that's my guess. Quick turnaround and a drop, which we kind of projected in our, when we were kind of analyzing her last race. The connection is going to keep the value low and so forth. You know, have to use the horse, but in this race, I'm really perplexed. And, sometimes what I look for is an early pace kind of horse and a, you know, closer type. And the horses I came up with were the 8 and the 9. 8, the horse that's going to be up close. It's capable at today's level. Kind of a second tier kind of horse and a very
that's,
deep race.
That's but, Super Dude for people who don't have the numbers in front of them.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Super Dude. And then the 9 was the other 0 Gravity, probably more of a turf horse, but I think this horse has some finish to him. Again, this is, Martin Garcia, I guess, is riding this horse for Joe Sharp, who's kind of warming up lately at Oaklawn. That's a horse that I think, you know, if the race kind of melts down a little bit, it's really kind of difficult to assess the pace in here, in my opinion. If it does melt down a little bit, I think that's one that could come running late. There's just so many knocks on so many of these horses. That's kind of the way I looked at it. I just basically picked horses that didn't knock as much and I thought would be prices, because I think there's a race you want to take a price if you're not in love with the two.
All right. I agree the 2 is going to be no value. Chris, what do you think in this race?
Well, it is a tough race because you have all these horses that are past their glory days, but at one time were really good horses, you know, like the 1-horse Timeline and even the 2-horse Kurlov and the 3-horse Curlin Rules. And there's others in here. They've all run some really good races at one time in their career, but they're kind of long past that. But they could wake up, you know, maybe they get a little extra vitamins or treatment or whatever, and then they wake up and run a big race. So it's really hard to leave them off, but you can't really trust any of those horses. So, you know, the Pulse reliable horse probably in here would be the 5, DeGrom, who's been in pretty good form for 6 months now or longer. Comes off a good effort where he actually was going longer than he really wants to at 10 furlongs. He cuts back in distance, does switch barns and ships, so that's a question mark. But he seems pretty solid. So 6-1 seems like fair, but not great value. But I think he's one you've got to use in the pick 5 if you're playing that. But the horse that got me interested and kind of excited about this race is the 7-horse Spikes Sherrill, who is making third start off a layoff. It's first race after a long layoff of over a year. First race off the bench was in the mud, so just I toss that as next race was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. It definitely shows he's rounding into form. So he's had 2 sprints. Now he stretches out to a route, third off a layoff. Has some really good races in his past performances that he could run back to, even though he's a 7-year-old. And, you know, so he's like a lot of these others. But to me, you know, he didn't run a whole bunch of bad races. He just had a long layoff. So he had some kind of a major injury, and he could be rounding into form. And he, unlike some of those others, he should be a big price. He's 15-1 in the morning line, and you could get that and more. So as a live long shot for me, it's a 7-horse Spikes Sherrill.
Okay, very interesting. Not sure. I'm scanning the racing form to see if he's ever won at 2 turns, which he has not. But he's a bomb, and third off a layoff is potent. What did you think, John?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought this horse, the 7, was more of a closing sprinter type. You know, so that was that. And the 5 worries me a little bit because of the service angle. You know, that horse was with service, I guess, 2 trainers back. And he's a 6-year-old, and I think he's a kind of cheap side. And I think service got the most out of him. And I'm really concerned about the barn change on that horse. So that's kind of it. But, you know, like I said, I'm more trying to take a shot here with the price. And that's why I'm, you know, I'm on the 8 and the 9.
Oh, yeah. So I forgot that you'd already, opined. Okay. Yeah. It's my turn. All right. I actually really like DeGrom here, and I might single him in this race because I think you have to go kind of deepish in other races. And here are all my points on him. He matched his best race as a 6-year-old 2 races ago at Laurel, going 2 turns. Then he went 10 furlongs at Laurel and finished 3rd as the favorite. He reacted a bit in that race and was going farther than he wants to go, apparently. So that's fine, because I would expect him to react to the best race of his life, a tie for the best race of his life 2 races ago. So now he's had some time since that big race. And since then, he's shipped to Oaklawn, and he has a nice sharp workout here. He also has a good post position. He has pretty good speed in a race that doesn't have much speed. He should be able to get a good trip from post 5. The trainer is 21% at Oaklawn with a 373 lifetime ROI, and he hits at 18% with a jock with an ROI of 251. I'm not too worried about the Jason Service aspect. I don't think he had him for very long. I'm not sure about that.
It was actually Tyler Service. It wasn't Jason. So I don't know if that matters. Definitely it wasn't Jason Service that had him though.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. It was the stepchild, Tyler Service. Yeah. So upgrade him. Now the other horse that I'm interested in, which is a horse that I had 2 horses scratched last week. I was really excited about Colonel's Dark Temper last week, and he scratched because it was a sloppy track, and he was 0-for-3 on sloppy tracks and had not even been in the money on sloppy tracks. So they scratched him. I really think that they're in it to win it. They think this horse is sitting on a big race. And the argument for him is that he ran a big race with a big number that can win this race as a 3-year-old. He hasn't recovered. He hasn't gotten back to that race since. But he has a circle back pattern that indicates that he's going to run better than he's run since then today. Now, the problem is that he was like in the 2 hole last time and he scratched, and now he's in the 13 hole. If he even gets in the race, he might not even get in the race. If he does get in the race, he's going to be all the way on the outside. Now, he can actually take the lead even from that post position. And if not, take the lead, get close to it. So if he makes the race, I'm definitely using him. But given that post position, I'm worried about him. So I'm going to keep DeGrom as my top pick either way, but I'll add Colonel's Dark Temper if he gets in.
I like that. I like that analysis on the 13. I didn't even, I kind of thought he might not get in. I probably didn't have much time, but I think that's good analysis, Scott. Can I ask one question on the, just go the five, because I don't know what you guys have been seeing, but I find that horses that ship out of Laurel don't fare as well. I don't know. I mean, that's just, something that I've kind of seen. I don't know if you guys see that. I don't know if it's the level of racing there or what, but I don't see those shippers out of Laurel, move up or stay the same level somewhere else and do well. I don't know if you guys seen that.
I think it's a legitimate concern among all his races that I've been in, like that mid-Atlantic in general, Laurel, Parks, Delaware. I'm always leery of them when they ship. So I think that's a legitimate concern. I think you got to factor that. It doesn't mean he can't win, but I do think that's the main negative on that horse is that he's shipping. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, it would be cool if Formulator would allow you to choose shippers from one track to another and just find that out. I know that Mike Hogan, who used to be the DRF Formulator guy, he used to come up with stats like that. And the way he did it is he just looked up like every single trainer and he added everything up manually and he put it all together in an Excel spreadsheet. So it's hard to say. I can't remember Laurel shippers doing particularly well, but this is a wide open race and I'm not going to let that stop me from betting the horse that I think is going to run the fastest.
So I did want to jump in with one other horse. The 3-horse Curlin Rules. He looks like he could clear. And in a race like that, this is always dangerous. He has some back numbers. So anytime you get a horse that might get an easy lead that has some back class, that might be just what he needs to wake himself up. He's making his third start at Oaklawn for Sadler. That one's one that I think you wouldn't want to leave off just because in this kind of a race, the horse on the lead is always dangerous.
All right. Well, I think that it is a pretty well covered pick five. Hopefully we gave some people some ideas and I hope that it pays 5 digits or more and some of our listeners have it and hopefully we have it. Do you have any other plays, John or Chris, for the rest of the card?
No, I didn't.
John. I don't. I did look at some races at Gulfstream. I think there's some interesting turf racing there. So if people aren't, if the late pick five at Oaklawn Park's not enough action for you, take a look at the racing at Gulfstream. Those turf races, there's some interesting ones there. Maybe I'll tweet out a few picks as well. So follow us on Twitter. And hopefully we will hit a couple of price horses in this pick five at Oaklawn.
All right. And while we're on the subject, I would like to let people know, even though I think he only tweets about once a year. But John's Twitter handle is at John Doyle, DOYLEAZ for Arizona. Right. And I would like to thank.
One thing, Scott, I tweet more than once a year, but I do it under at Optics, EQ. So
Okay. So you're the man behind the tweets. Those tweets.
That's right.
Okay. Optics, yeah. EQ. All right. Okay. So yeah, that completely makes sense. All right. So follow at Optics EQ if you want to get opinions. And I know John, now that I think about it, I I remember seeing a tweet of yours where you went over a race and like you nailed it. It was like a 10 to 1 horse. I don't know how long ago that was, but it was a few months ago.
Yeah, probably. So, yeah. But and the website is opticseq.com too. Just so if anybody wants to go there, there's a lot of good videos and a lot of good documentation if you just want to try to understand how this stuff works.
Yeah, and if
you John, you'll send the plots to Scott so he can tweet those out too. For these
I will.
Big five.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Yeah, what is a PDF a good format, or what do you want, Scott?
Yeah, and I'll give you our email address after we sign off.
Okay.
But yeah, I was thinking about it cause I haven't gotten around to learning optics plot, and it interests me greatly. And Chris has shown me and give me analysis showing, explained, I think it was at the NHC 2 years ago, he explained how it all worked. And of course I don't remember anything he said. So I've had too much time on my hand. Yeah. I've had too little time to sort of learn the optics plot, but if you're in a rut, if you're not doing well, I was thinking about this today. If you're not doing well at the track, if you're on a losing streak, you have to try something different. And I actually have, while a few winners here, I haven't been hitting, I haven't been cashing. So I'm going to take a look at those things and see if I can glean any additional opinion so that I can hit that pick five.
Cool.
And so before we wrap it up, I would like to thank our honored guest, NHC champion and optics founder, John Doyle. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Chris.
Fantastic. So that will conclude show number 60 of the PH Pod. Good luck this weekend, and please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.
Giddy up.